Brian, would you like to relate a brief history of the farm?
Yeah, the farm was bought by my great-grandfather back in 1925. He owned Red Earth Farm, and he bought Park House as well and set two sons up. He got more than two sons, but he set Uncle Jack up on Red Earth and my granddad, which was Harold Smith here on Park House, and they farmed. But then my grandfather was 53 and died at the end of 1952, which left my mother and a brother and my granny. And they were going to sell the farm at that point, but then my mother had already met my dad, and they got married in 1955 and it carried on with them. And then in mid-70s, my mother became ill, and he died at age 47, which left my dad and myself then, and my sister. But my sister went into nursing, and I was 19, my sister was 16, so my dad and myself. And then when it got to 1989, my dad became ill, and that's when I took charge then. My dad did get better, but then he did die with throat cancer in 1998. And I got married in 97, did something different, I married an Irish girl. So it was my wife and myself then, and that's where we are up to now.
Going back to when your mum and dad were farming, what kind of farming were they doing?
Dairying. My dad was a cattle dealer, really. You'd like to think he was a cattle dealer. He went to market most days.
Where did he go in those days?
Chelford on a Monday, Congleton on a Tuesday, Leek on a Wednesday, Ashbourne on a Thursday, and Derby on a Friday, and Newtoxeter on a Saturday.
So how did he manage to get all his work done as well?
Back then, they'd always had a workman, so there was always somebody at home with my mother, like, doing the work. But my dad, he wouldn't go to market every day. Some weeks there would be an odd day when he'd miss, I suppose, but that's what he did, really. He did go to market most days.
So was he buying and selling every day?
Buying and selling, especially in the mid-70s. Yeah, sort of 60s, 70s. My dad always had land away from home as well, tenant, like rented land. He'd take land on anywhere. And we did have a lot of cattle. Back in the 70s, with the dairy cows, we had 300 cattle altogether. But then when my mum died, he said if that was working hard and keeping a lot of cattle, we'd do less. And we cut back, and we were never the same size again.
Was he beef and dairy cattle that he dealt in?
Yeah, he always bought cows, yeah. But they had used to rear heifers in the early days as well. But then went off that, went on to Hereford, put them all in calf to Hereford.
So he was dealing in store cattle?
Yeah, yeah. He'd buy him, I think it was a lot easier to do then, buy him, take him to another market, sell him, or he'd go up in the hills to the other man that used to work for him, Jeff Goodwin. Jeff said to me that they used to go up in hills, or go up in hills, see what they've got, and buy stuff off folk market. If he could.
So how long would he keep stuff?
It depends. If he could make a profit straight away, he'd sell them straight away.
Was he good at it? Was the job lucrative for him?
Yeah, I think it was much easier to do then, because he hadn't got the regulation like now.
No TB testing.
No movement testing, the same. Yeah, it seemed easy to do.
There was no paperwork, was there?
No, and I suppose back then, there were dealers, it's what they did. For a thing that were good at it, perhaps made most money.
Do you think, looking back, like, we've got all this regulation which is supposed to make things safer on the movement side of it and everything, but looking back to that time, did you see any problems with it?
There didn't seem to be any problems with it, I suppose.
We didn't see a lot of disease or anything, did we?
No, I don't suppose there was, really. Yeah, the one thing with TB, I suppose, the protection of badgers, that's made the TB more serious in recent years, hasn't it?
Yes. Were there any other things that your dad was doing while he was farming that are obviously very different from now? What were you doing with the land?
The land on the farm, well, we used to have dairy cattle on most of it, and the top ground, which is 32 acres, it's 121 acres altogether, but the top 32 acres that had the store cattle on. I own store cattle down the wood as well, which is 9 acres down there.
So was it heavily stocked?
I suppose it was reasonably well stocked back then, yeah. I suppose used an amount of fertiliser as well, but not like some farmers used it.
But was your grassland still what we'd call species rich?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, I'd say it was traditional. Also back then, I suppose, we kept cattle out all winter, where Well, I've only got five out, usually only between 5 and 10 outside at winter. I've took Tay out up the field. I remember it one time when I was 20, 21 or 2 probably. I took Tay out up the field to 104 and went and took Tay out for another 128 on Foal Farm down the road, because we got Foal Farm as well at that point, grazing it.
Store cattle.
Yeah, we've got many cattle about, yeah.
So would you have to buy some fodder for that many stock, or did you make it all?
We made a lot of hay. We're seriously into hay making. We rented a farm at Grindon for 7 years, but like I say, we ground all around the place where we made hay. We made hay at Cheddleton, Norton, and Grindon. That was an 160-acre farm that we rented from Arthur Mycott. Yeah, 160 acres that was. And we made hay up there. I can remember when I was a lad, only, I don't know, 15 or 16, I think. I brought 17 loads of that myself from up there.
Did you have much help through with the haymaking?
Yeah, we did. We did have people help us, yeah. I can think of various folk that used to help us, yeah. And another thing with the hay is he used to go to Chelford. He'd go and he'd buy 4 loads at a time and send it back, and no driver could leave until they'd all have gone another to unload.
And would that be all different people? Not like one firm like Fielding?
No, just 4 wagon loads.
Because they were all little bales, weren't they?
Yeah, it might be, what would it be? It could be 50 loads of hay in Chelford, I suppose. Well, more than that. Just buy 4 loads of hay.
Yeah.
If we could get through hay in them days. Yeah, I can remember when, in winter time, with cows inside as well, we'd use as many as 85 bales a day. Little bales of hay.
And you were all in shippings then?
Yeah, when I was 13, that was when we were still in the old cow sheds. But I knew what it's like to milk with units, carry them, tip it in the chains. But it was New Year's Eve, 1974, when we started in the new building. We moved all the cows out of the old buildings into the new building, which was tied 30 up each side, and we'd scrape it out down the middle of the tractor. Still all on hay back then.
Well, you'd think that was a vast improvement then.
Yes, but it was in pipeline as well.
Because you weren't barring all the muck out.
No, except we didn't have a scraper straight away, because we got a man working for us, and my dad seemed to insist that the man keep cleaning the shed out with a barrow.
And how was your corn?
We had got a corn bin when we were in the old cow sheds. My dad bought the first, it was one of the first corn bins, I think it was the first corn bin that came around this area. Jay Waterhouse and Sons used to deliver the corn into it. But then when we built the new building with another bin, we made a barrow. So we had a big barrow, but we needed a bigger barrow for that shed. So what we did, we got a 100-gallon water tank and made a frame for it, put it on wheels, and that was the corn barrow which held 400 weight of corn that you pushed in.
Took a bit of pushing then. And how were your cows performing then? What breeds were you milking?
Mainly Friesian tarts, not really into big, tall, leggy sorts, though.
Which I suppose would be coming in at that time, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but still I like a good Friesian tart cow. Well, I know I'd probably get 10,000 litres a cow, but if I can get 5,500 litres, that'll do me if the price is all right.
On a lower cost system.
Yeah.
So while you've been farming, Brian, what are the big changes that you've seen and done?
Well,
I mean, you've mentioned going from churns to bulk tank.
I suppose that's it, it's mechanisation, I suppose, and technology, going into bulk tank. And I suppose we made hay till about 1991 or 92, when first made some silage and then went all onto silage.
This is baled silage?
Big bale silage, and we're still on big bale silage. Make some round bale hay as well. I only make little bale hay if we've got some else, because it's more of a novelty now doing that.
Have you still got a baler? A small baler?
I've still got a small baler, yeah, but I don't use it. It's like vintage back of the shed now.
So do you have to get a contractor and do your small baling?
Yeah, I do, yeah. But if we only do 400 bales, it isn't a big cost anyway. And we've got some friends, Simon and Samantha. They keep a few sheep and some donkeys. And I'll pay them with 30 bales of hay. If we do like 400 bales, and they jump at that part and come and help us.
So what was the next change? I mean, there were a lot of changes in the 70s, weren't there?
So the main change in the 70s was for us was going from old cow shed into the new cow shed. And I suppose that continued till 1999, that bit, after my dad had died, so I was milking on the ship and on my own. That's a dangerous job on your own. There was a few times when I was scrambling from under a cow if I got kicked for that. So after my dad died, that's when I looked at putting a parlour in and totally changed the system. Went loose housed on straw with a biggish feed area inside, which I can put 4 bales of silage in, keep 50 cows in the main building and the rest down the yard and the milk through an 8/16 parlour.
And you found that's been a big benefit?
Yeah, I suppose for my number of cows, that's a big parlour, so I don't spend too long milking.
How did quotas affect you?
Folk were doing all sorts when quotas come in, as I remember, drying cows off to get down to the quota. I think in the end, though, quotas was perhaps a good thing, because now quotas have gone again. It seems like some folk are going really mad at it. And you get this flooding the market now. Like we've had 2 years now, haven't we?
Well, last year was a total disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's like been 2 years of hard going, which is difficult then when it's like that. But it's just picking up now, isn't it?
For how long?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think there's going to be a lot of milk this summer, I suppose. The prices are coming down, so we have to wait and see again.
In this recent severe downturn of the milk job, do you see any answers for a traditional farm like yourself? Because it's been a particularly difficult time last year, wasn't it?
What we've looked at and I've been helping with is something called Free Range Milk Marketing Board, which Nick Iscock from Somerset, travelling around the country in 2016, organising the meetings. So Norrie said, should we have a meeting somewhere locally? And so we did. We organised the only meeting in Staffordshire, which we had in the village hall at Mearbreek. And he came along and spoke about it. And then recently we've just been to a meeting at Withall, south of Birmingham, where he invited 45, media briefing meeting, which he speaks of it as a campaign to get this milk going, free-range milk, which is going to be marketed as blacktop milk with Enjoy Milk on the top and on the label, marketed as Enjoy Milk. It is a campaign. He says it is being produced at the moment, but I think it must be small scale. But if consumers got interested in it enough and wanted it, then it would take off, I think.
And what's his major line that he's plugging?
That it's free-range milk,
where possible.
Yeah, where some of them are saying cows have to be out 180 days during the summer. He's saying cows inside for the winter, out for the summer, not specifying a number of days. If the weather was bad, you'd have to put them in. If it was particularly bad for a few days in the summer even.
Which we've had recently, haven't we?
Yeah, we've had an odd time, but I suppose we've never put cows in like that, but then we're not overstocked. Like, if you've got 200 or 300 cows going out, then slapping it down with rain, I suppose, for a week, and they soon get trodden up, where we've still got the 50 or 60, and can go out just the same as they've done for the last 50 years, not trodden everywhere up.
So would you like to continue in dairy?
Yeah, I love the job, but I don't like the situation, where you're not paid enough. That's the thing with it. Like, since the milk marketing board went, the power was given away. Certain buyers, supermarkets, have got such power now and control of it, where with the free-range milk marketing board, if Nick Iscock can get that going, it's the biggest opportunity at present time to get farmers together. But there seems to be some farmers trying to pick fault with it.
Because they feel threatened, possibly?
Yeah, I think so. And, well, because the price has gone up now, like Nick Iscock is saying he'll pay 28/29 a litre for it, whether the milk goes up or down. Some farmers are up on around 28p, I think, now, and they're thinking they're going to get more, so they're not keen to move to the free-range milk marketing board, I don't think.
And peg it.
Mm.
But if the price dropped, they'd soon be there, I guess.
They would, yeah.
What sort of future do you see for this kind of farm?
With the free-range milk marketing board, if he can market milk from farms like that, if you can get enough folk together, I think that has a good future. The rules are simple, and there's a demand for it, free-range milk.
But otherwise?
There's probably always a demand. There'll probably always be good support for farmers, but the way some of the farmers do it, I think, it's like, I suppose referred to as factory farming. Like, I like to think I'm a traditional farmer. doing the job.
But unless this kind of traditional farm is supported, it'll go, won't it?
Yeah, or if you're getting the right kind of price, I think you can keep going if the price is right.
And what about getting young people to take over on this kind of farm?
Well, we haven't got any young people to take over, I suppose, but lots of young people these days, I suppose they've got a variety of jobs they can choose. We have a young lad that comes on a Wednesday. He's into farming, but I suppose it'll depend when he leaves school how it looks and whether he still feels the same about it, because his brother's gone into engineering and another brother helps a contractor, so we'll see when he leaves school whether he wants to do or go into a lot of jobs where they don't have to work 7 days a week.
No, that's true.